Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Nicole Walker on behalf of the appellant William Dahl. There are three issues before the court today. The first one is whether the trial court violated Dahl's due process rights to notification when it allowed the state to amend the indictment on the day of trial. The second issue is whether the trial court erred when it denied Mr. Dahl's motion for judgment of acquittal as the state failed to present any evidence as to distance element of the offense. And finally, whether the trial court erred in failing to deny the motion for judgment of acquittal as the state failed to establish that the dance studio was a school, as that term is defined in 11 Delaware Code 1112.
What does the record reflect as to how the state became aware that you had a complete defense to the May 16th date? And was that some pretrial exchange, and then the day of trial they concluded you were going to be able to defend on May the 16th, so they decided to amend the indictment?
The best that I could divine from the record, Your Honor, is that the printouts from the home confinement box, as well as the probation officer's testimony, was obtained, I believe, through the prosecutor. So they did have the opportunity to review those documents and to ascertain what his defense would be. There's no indication in the record as to when they obtained that information, but Mr. Dahl testified that at the case review, he learned it was May 16th. That was the date.
And how was that? Was there a bill of particulars or just the giving of the police report, or what was it?
It was the police report, Your Honor. It was the date of the incident was listed on the front page as May 16th. And at no time does the record reflect the state intended to dissuade him from that belief.
And was that police report given in exchange for a preliminary hearing waiver, or how did you come in possession of that?
I could not tell from the record, Your Honor, but they did have the police report well in advance of trial, and I believe at least at the first case review, as Mr. Dahl learned that day, that May 16th was the date at issue.
Well, what puts the date in issue, the indictment, or what he learns at case review?
Well, Your Honor, The case law says that if the indictment says May generically, which is what it said here, he's on notice for May. However, it would seem that a defendant in this particular case would be able to justifiably rely on a representation made by the prosecutor. May 16th, I would imagine, wouldn't be a date pulled out of the air by a police officer to put on a police report, and he did have the opportunity to obtain evidence as to his whereabouts, so that he could provide a very narrow alibi defense. And my understanding is, from the record, that once the state had the printouts available to it, it did not at any time mention anything to the defense until the day of trial that it was going to amend the indictment, include all of April as well.
No, I understand that, but I thought that the objection to the amendment was on the basis that he was only on notice of the May 16 date. Is that incorrect?
No, it is correct. The indictment.
But he was on notice because of the indictment that there was at least grand jury had reason to believe that he was during the month of May 2005 within 500 feet of the Dance Academy on more than one occasion.
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to the indictment reading May, the argument is, yes, the indictment states that. However, the prosecutor led the defense to believe, or the prosecution led the state, the defense to believe that May 16th was the date at issue, as it was on the police report, and it was never corrected.
Well, does the record show where it was on the police report and why May 16th was entered on the police report? Because when you say the prosecution led him to believe that, it's one thing for the prosecutor to lean over to defense counsel at a case review and say, we're going to prosecute on the basis that he was present on May 16th, and we didn't know that specific detail at the time of the indictment, which is unlikely because the police report usually comes before the indictment. But how does one rely on what a police officer entered in the police report as the date of the incident as the police officer knew it at the time when the charging document's the indictment, not the police report?
Well, I don't want to insinuate that the prosecutor purposely misled the defense with respect to telling him explicitly. The point is on the police report, the date of the incident on the very front page says May 16th. So it's very specific on the police report. When a police officer writes a report, he's writing the allegation as submitted to him. And for him to pick a date out of thin air is very unlikely.
Well, it's not unlikely, though, that the case doesn't end with the first incident report or police report. Evidence is gathered up to the time of indictment and presented to the grand jury. What I understood the indictment to reflect was the evidence that was presented to the grand jury. And that's what you can rely on. That was the basis for probable cause. There's apparently nothing submitted to the grand jury that would narrow the date to the one day of May 16th. And the issue then becomes, was the amendment adding April important or not important?
Well, first,
not, in my mind, whether it was, at least at this moment, whether it was on more than one occasion in May or whether it was specifically reasonable to rely on the single date of May 16th on what you've represented.
But, Your Honor, it's clear from the testimony, specifically the detective was asked, was the charge based on more than one day's worth of conduct? And he said no. It was one particular day that it was actually charged with. With respect to April, Your Honor, there is prejudice in this case, as the police officer also testified at trial that he changed his estimate of the date from May 16th to sometime April 8th. And that's when he believed the new date with respect to when the offense occurred.
I'm still, maybe I'm now more confused than I was when I started.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. May 16th is the date on the police report of the alleged incident.
Correct.
Okay. And the police report makes no reference to May 16th and other times or anything like that, correct?
Correct.
Just says May 16th, this happened.
Right.
All right. Then after that police report, it goes to a grand jury, there's an indictment, and it just says during the month of May, and it says more than one occasion.
Correct.
That seems inconsistent with the police report, or at least it's not the same. It may not be inconsistent. But
correct.
Okay. At what point does your client get any additional information with respect to the charges? Because you started describing the fact that your client was told it was May 16th and it was only one occasion. When did that information come to your client?
The client learned on the day of the case review that it was May 16th. Now, whether that...
Oh, wait a second. Okay, well, let's just stop there. On the day of the case review, who said it was just May 16th?
That's not clear. And I would imagine one of two things. Either the prosecutor talked to the defense counsel and explained that, yeah, that's the date, or the defense counsel relied upon the police report himself and communicated that to the defendant.
Well, okay, but
you said just a minute ago that at some point you found out that the grand jury was also only told about one date. So even though the indictment that came out of the grand jury's meeting said the whole month of May, they were only given evidence of an incident on one date. How did you learn all that?
Okay. I apologize. That's not the facts of the case. What actually happened was at the trial, the police officer testified that the allegation contained in the police report was as the result of one particular day, and that he put May 16th down as a result of his interview with Heather and Ryan Pate, and that it was, and the police report, in the body of the police report, it indicates that the charge was related to this one incident. And in fact, at trial, the prosecution tried to get in evidence as to prior occasions, and the trial court struck that as irrelevant. So it is clear that it was one particular occasion that this occurred.
And the one occasion was supposedly May 16th. Until what point in time did you find out that, no, we're saying it was April 8th?
That would be at trial.
Why did the trial judge say, under no circumstances will I continue this case at this juncture?
Your Honor, I can't tell from the record. And looking at the docket, it doesn't appear to me that it was continued on several occasions. Now, the trial was 1 year after the offense allegedly occurred, so that may have been her concern at that time.
How much time expired between defense counsel and defendant knowing that the indictment said on more than one occasion during May, but at case review had some reason to believe, though the record seems unclear about the basis of it, that in fact there was one offense on one day. How much time between case review and trial?
Between case review and trial?
Right.
I believe, if I recall correctly, it was a few months. I can't tell the court exactly how.
As soon as the defendant and his counsel found out that the evidence that supported the indictment was limited to one day, May 16th, why wasn't a bill of particulars filed to nail that down before trial?
Your Honor, I'm not sure the answer to that question, except to state that perhaps counsel believed he could justifiably rely upon what the police report was stating as the date.
Am I just too far from the game to understand that the charging document is an indictment and not a police report? And
correct.
That what you work from is an indictment? And then if the indictment's vaguer than the information you know the state has available to it to produce against you in evidence at trial, you nail it down so you don't have to worry about a date outside May 16th?
Your Honor, I believe that the law is that the indictment is what is the charge.
That's what you're on notice about, that you could face a trial that would produce evidence of an offense in May on more than one occasion.
Generally speaking, I would agree with that, except to the extent that in this particular case, defense counsel and his client had reason to believe that it was limited to one date. If the court is just going to look to whether adding April is the prejudice in this case, as I mentioned, the detective testified that his new date that he arrived at in August of 05, which would be about 9 months before trial, was April 8th. And, of course, in April, it's clear he would not have been on notice for April.
So how many dates were testified about by the officer at trial? April 8th and May 16th?
Correct. He was questioned about the May 16th date, obviously, by defense counsel, and then he testified that he...
Well, let me rephrase
I'm sorry.
It then. What did the prosecution present at trial was the date of the crime?
They did not.
Well, what did the officer say was the date?
He said that he reached the May 16th date as an estimate from his discussion with the witnesses. He then said that after further review, he doesn't really explain what exactly was the basis. He re-estimated it to be April 8th.
So the trial theory, or the prosecution theory at trial, was April 8th, not May 16th.
I believe so, yes.
And was the trial judge aware of that when she denied the continuance request?
No, Your Honor.
What was the basis for the continuance request?
So he could obtain further evidence for an alibi. See, this was a narrow alibi defense that he intended to present, not just a generic I didn't do it defense, as the state contends. And, in fact, a very similar case was mentioned by the state in its brief from Mississippi, of all places. It actually.
What do you mean by that? As opposed to New York or Minnesota?
Sorry. With respect to the case in Mississippi, there was an amendment on the day of trial with respect to the day, changing it from a specific date in June to a generic date in July.
Well, before we leave that, did I understand you to say the officer realized 9 months before trial that April 8th was the correct date?
That's his testimony, yes, Your Honor.
And notwithstanding that, they're still talking about May the 16th at case review, and having had the information for 9 months, the state didn't ask to change the indictment until the day of trial?
That's correct.
Was there any discovery outstanding?
No, Your Honor. I believe that they had obtained, it appears from the record, that they had obtained all the printouts and probation officer's testimony was available, and I think that was the only discovery at issue.
And did your client have an alibi for April 8th?
Your Honor, he didn't present. He didn't prepare for one, and he didn't present one because he wasn't aware that April 8th was
right.
The date.
Right. I'm asking about once he found out that it was April 8th, and once you decided you were going to appeal. Is there an alibi for it? Would he, if he were given the opportunity to be retried, have an alibi for April 8th?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. He didn't do further preparation as he's been incarcerated. And
so there's nothing in the record on that point. Is that
correct.
What you're saying?
That's correct. So he, as I indicated, the case in Mississippi dealt with almost precisely the same initial facts, which is changing the indictment on the day of trial from a specific date in June to a generic date in July. The court in that case said, look, if this was a generic I didn't do it defense, which they determined it was, there's no prejudice to the defendant. Had he come to court prepared to present an alibi defense for the specific date in question, then time would have been material to the indictment. And just as in Delaware, the case law demonstrated that there's no bright line as to which parts of the indictment are material and which are go to form. And the court needs to look at the facts of each case. Next,
your argument to the trial judge was, and my client denies doing it and on May the 16th, and not only does he deny doing it, he's got an alibi.
Correct.
And the state's response is, well, he probably does have an alibi for May the 16th because we've concluded, in fact, it was on April 8th, so we'd like to amend the indictment today on the date of trial and include April and May.
Correct. That's exactly what happened. And even when he asked to amend it to April, it still wasn't presented to defense counsel or the court why. They didn't say because we have an April 8th date. That came out during the testimony of the officer.
Can you explain to me why you and the state differ on whether the crux of his defense was a total denial of ever having been at the dance academy or shopping center?
Well, he did state that his testimony was, I've never been there. However, because
well,
he was...
Then he wouldn't have had any problem with an April 6th alibi then, would he?
Well, he may have if he couldn't present, if he couldn't obtain any evidence to support where he was at the time.
But his testimony would have been consistent on a new trial or a later trial. It would have been, I've never been there.
Correct.
May 16th, April 6th, any other time.
That's correct. But as the court is aware, there's a big difference between saying I've never been there and saying here's a receipt to show that I've been at such and such a place on this date.
Right.
And he did testify what he normally did during that time frame in April. I've been to Narcotics Anonymous classes, did my laundry, was with my friends. So based on that information, there was an opportunity for him to, would have been an opportunity for him to at least investigate whether he had an alibi defense for that date. The next issue before the court is the distance element, and that the state failed to present any evidence.
Was the jury instructed on alibi?
That's a good question. I don't recall at this time.
Well, he wouldn't have been if his testimony was he'd never been there.
That's correct. That's probably correct. With respect to the distance, the state failed to present any evidence, including any expert testimony or precise measurement, or what this court has held as appropriate, an estimate by a witness based on personal observation. Instead, what the state relies on is a diagram that was hand-sketched by the prosecutor from his own memory, in which he led the witness through it. The prosecutor's hand sketch obviously was not part of the evidence entered onto the record, and the witness characterized it as only pretty fairly representing the layout of the shopping center. And it wasn't drawn to scale, and there were no distance estimates contained in the diagram. And in fact, in the colloquy between the prosecutor and the witness, there was no discussion of distance whatsoever. In fact, reviewing her colloquy, which is at A9 to 12 of the appellant's appendix, she uses words like this, goes like a space, like right in here, right here, something like that. Then there's another one, and no business is in this area for a while. And the prosecutor asked, businesses are located in, she cuts them off and says, right. Her testimony is so vague that it causes confusion. Looking at her colloquy, one could reach several conclusions as to where certain stores and things are located in there. At no time does she provide any estimate as to distances. And this court in Tolson versus State and Davis versus State has held that, yes, a witness, a lay witness, can testify as to the estimates of distance, but first, they must provide an estimate of a distance, and secondly, it must be based on their personal observation. In those cases, the police officers, based on their own experience, were able to say, for example, I know highways are 12 feet and there's three lanes are 3 feet and there are three northbound lanes, et cetera, and that's how they arrived at their estimate.
Was there testimony from Mrs. Pate that she saw your client staring at her students from the windows of the academy?
She testified that from the studio she could see him, and that provides no guidance whatsoever as to the distance.
So the answer to my question is no, she did not testify that she saw him staring at her dance student from the windows of the dance academy. I guess you could interpret that statement two ways.
Right.
She standing at the window saw him, not him standing at the window staring in.
I'm sorry. Yes, yeah, she testified that she was at the window seeing him.
I got it.
Okay. And that doesn't provide us any guidance because the range of vision can be different. And the other interesting point here is that the children or the patrons felt uncomfortable when they were going to the pizza place. So it's not clear whether he was within 500 feet of the pizza place versus the studio. In any event, there somewhere in this layout was an open area, a picnic area, a nail salon, a pizza place, a sub shop, and a Lowe's, a Super G, and other businesses. And there's no indication from the record what was located where. So the court, as the fact finder, was left to speculate, and that answers the earlier question. This was a judge trial, so there were no jury instructions. The court, as a fact finder, was left to speculate, and it did so, and it stated in support of its verdict, there's no reason to believe this shopping center is anything other than an average strip mall that is well less than 500 feet. Nothing in the record whatsoever supports that statement. So the risk of error when dealing with spatial relationships that are hardly intuitive is too great to take away one's liberty for 20 years.
You have about 2.5 minutes left. Did you want to save it?
I'll save it, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and please the court. As to that first issue and what all these dates meant and why, how they got into the police report, Detective Taylor, I believe, was assigned to the case and interviewed Heather Pate, the complaining witness, in June, and tried to get from Heather when all this had taken place. And Heather, from her trial testimony, certainly started noticing Mr. Dahl coming to the dance academy or the area by the pizza place in the autumn of 2004 while she was rehearsing the Nutcracker with her children. This had been going on for quite some time. She remembered confronting him, as best she could tell, sometime in February of 2005. Eventually called her husband, who had this confrontation. Now, the date that the police officer was putting in the report was, as best as he could tell, the date of the confrontation between the husband, Ryan Pate, and Mr. Dahl. And he put that down as May 16th, I think, which was couldn't be because that was a Monday, according to my calendar. But that's where that date came from. It had nothing to do with the offense date. It had nothing to do with how long a time this was going on. Based on that interview that the detective had with Heather, the indictment was handed down then in July, charging sometime during the month of May. Seems about as definitive as you can get, but we knew that it went on for quite some time, and so did the defense. The defense had everything we had. It was Mr. Roberts, Don Roberts, was the prosecutor, and he just had the standard, you know, whatever I know, you know policy. That's how they got the police report, which, of course, is not discoverable. And then upon further reflection, or I believe the detective then interviewed Ryan in August after the indictment, and then this is where this April date comes up. But again, this is Again, he's wrong as to the day, since he comes up with, I think, April 8th, which would have been a Friday. And the one thing we are clear about from Heather's testimony is that all of these incidents occur on a Saturday, because that's the day she has the children there rehearsing their various dance numbers.
I'm not confused on this, are you saying that the April 8th date was disclosed prior to trial?
Somebody. I think came out at trial during cross-examination of the detective regarding why he put the May 16th date in.
So the answer is no?
No, I don't think it was. We had no interest in it. I mean, it's neither here nor there, as far as we're concerned, when this confrontation occurred. We're more interested in when this entire string of...
But once you pick a day, and the defendant's interested in the day it occurred, because when it was suggested it was May the 16th, he had an alibi. And now you're telling us April 8th was even an impossibility because it wasn't a Saturday.
We never said to anybody under any circumstances that this was one offense date, let alone any specific offense date. That was clear from the beginning. The officer, for some reason, felt in when the little box on the police report says offense date, he felt he needed to put in one specific date there. But certainly, if one were looking at the police report and say, "Oh, here's a specific date," and then the indictment comes down and says on numerous occasions, well, you know that police report can probably be put aside. That date is pretty meaningless. Because the state is charging him with a series of incidents over a period of time, as originally indicted May.
Well, but what about the case review at which apparently the defense was told, May 16th is the date of the offense?
I was not at case review, and I did not talk to Mr. Roberts specifically about a case review, but I cannot imagine that happened. I cannot imagine that happened. This took place over a period of many, many months. And that was clear from the get-go. If Heather Pate could remember nothing else, she could remember that. It was Saturday, and it took place over a long period of time.
Could it be that the police report was given or shown to defense counsel at case review for the first time?
It was given. When he got it, I don't know. I mean, it would have been sent out with our first discovery. Here's the police report, Mr. Radulski, along. Here's everything else we have.
Unlikely that the explanation that it was discovered to be May 16th at case review was because the police report was given to defense counsel for the first time at case review.
I can't say that it wasn't. It was given to him at some point, obviously, during the course of discovery.
Out why the other side says it was at case review that May 16th became the defense's view of what the date of the offense would be.
If that's the recollection, that it was at case review that they first got the police report, we would never, Mr. Roberts, I'm sure, never said to them, "Oh, the offense date, by the way," even though the indictment says during the month of May on numerous occasions, you can ignore that,
but
because
you
we're going to go for May 16th.
You agree that the best source of how May 16th came into play was simply because it was indicated on the police report as the date of the incident?
That's the only place that date comes up.
Okay.
Filled in the offense date box on the police report.
Ms. Walker says that the officer knew he was focusing at least on May the 8th, 9 months before trial. Why wait until the day of trial to amend the indictment?
We simply charged based on the officer's first interview, and I'm not sure who indicted it. I don't think Mr. Roberts did. Talking to him, he said he would have indicted it, including much more time. But anyway, it came down as the month of May. Based on the officer's initial interview with Heather Pate. Now, when exactly the prosecutor, Mr. Roberts, realized that, geez, you know, in addition to May, okay, he was there in May, but, you know, we've got this going all the way back, really into 04, I'll just ask, and realizing, of course, now this is a bench trial, which is very important, I think, I'll ask the judge, on the morning of trial.
Now, my question was, Ms. Walker's telling us she has information that leads her to believe 9 months prior to trial, the officer knew May the 16th in his report was not accurate. based on his subsequent interview with another witness, it was April 8th. Notwithstanding the fact that he knew it was April 8th, he apparently didn't communicate that to the prosecutor, but we still have a defendant who has April 8th within the knowledge of the state through the police for 9 months, but then on the day of trial finds out it's April.
I don't know what kind of reliance. I don't know. I don't think anybody found out anything about April 8th until the officer testified to that at trial. I don't think that ever made it to anybody's knowledge. I think that came out at trial.
Somebody was thinking about April when they made the motion to amend the indictment.
Not because of that date, though, just because they knew that this had been going on for quite a while. Well before May 1st, this had been going on. That April 8th date, I have no idea. That has, as far as I could tell, that is something that came out when the officer was cross-examined about why he put the May 16th date down.
Well, let's move to something that's probably a lot easier. Where in the record do we find the state proving distance? What's the record citation for that?
There is no specific testimony regarding, say, the officer going out there with a tape measure, saying, yes, I took a tape measure and I measured it and it's exactly 184 feet or something like that. No. It's based upon testimony primarily of Heather Pate the Newark Dance Academy was in a strip shopping center. It was here, standard strip shopping center. There was an establishment, I think she said a nail salon, and then there was the pizza restaurant, and outside the pizza restaurant is where the defendant sat. The judge said that's good enough. We're talking about 500 feet. That's including end zones, that's a football field and a half. That's a block and a city block and a half. It's obvious, basically, said the trial judge, that when we're talking about a location separated from the Newark Dance Academy by one storefront, we are not talking about 500 feet, more than 500 feet. So that is where that comes from. This is an inference, a conclusion that the trial judge drew from the testimony specifically of Heather Pate. Also her statement that standing at the window, she could see the defendant sitting outside the pizza restaurant, staring at the children coming in and out of the dance academy in their leotards. So she was close enough to see his face, and if it was more than 500 feet away, again, a football field and a half, including the end zones, well, she must have quite some vision to make out a face from that distance. So all the evidence seems to indicate that the defendant was well within the 500 foot. And as the trial judge pointed out, this was never really disputed. I mean, the defense didn't bring in a witness who said, oh, no, I went out there and measured it, and it was 502 feet or something like that. Or it wasn't even close, really, according to the trial judge. This was well within that 500-foot limit, well within that football field and a half.
Can you address what the primary purpose of this academy was? And when there's testimony that dance instruction was taught there of persons ages 2 to adult.
Yes.
Which basically is everybody.
Yes.
Over 2. How that satisfies that it be a school or any other institution which has as its primary purpose the education or instruction of children under 16.
Yes. The testimony, well, I think the judge primarily relied upon the testimony of Heather Pate that on Saturdays was the offense, which were the offense days. The academy was exclusively for children in the 7 to 13-year-old range. However, she did say that at other times the academy was open to adults. Now,
well, if it's one day a week, how does that, and there's 7 days in a week, how does it satisfy the primary purpose if 6 out of 7 days that's not happening?
Well, I think it's again, reasonable to infer that since this is the Newark Dance Academy and not the Arthur Murray Dance Studio, that The word academy, like the Academy of the Dance in Wilmington, that's almost exclusively for children, preteens and teens through high school. That's what these dance academies teach. They teach dance to children. It's not to say they'll turn an adult away. It's not to say that a 19-year-old, taking a year off between high school and college won't continue studies there.
The word academy is basically from which you make an inference,
yes,
beyond a reasonable doubt that the primary purpose of this institution is to teach people under the age of 16.
I would do that. The judge did not. The judge said, judge based her decision on the fact that on the undisputed testimony that on Saturdays this was definitely a school for the education of children within the age range, whatever it was. She did not go on and make the any other inference regarding what it did the rest of the week. I'm very comfortable with that. I don't know if the court is or not.
Do you acknowledge that this is an element of the offense?
I'm sorry.
Do you acknowledge that this is an element of the...
Yeah, well, definitely. Definitely. It has to be a school within the definition. The definition is a rather broad one, but it has to be primarily for the education of children under a certain age. I believe it's 16.
And just I don't have any misunderstanding, there is no direct testimony on that point in the record. Is that correct?
Other than Saturdays, which are the offense dates. The direct testimony as of what... the student body of the academy was on Saturdays. Her other testimony of Heather Pate was when she was asked generally about the school. She said the students will be anywhere from children to adult. Now she didn't specify what she meant by adult, but
let's assume hypothetically, and this defendant was there on Wednesday. If your theory is correct, he could be arrested and prosecuted for his presence on Wednesday, couldn't he?
Well, if school was in session, I would assume so. And
for adults.
Then I think maybe, perhaps, we would have to have some testimony as to the makeup of the student body on that particular day. We couldn't simply have Heather come in, on Saturdays we have children, and on Wednesdays we have all adults, but because on Saturdays we have children, therefore...
Tell the court, how does prosecution for doing something within so many feet of a school work, like a public school? If the person selling drugs in the back of the school on Christmas Day, when it's clearly closed, no one's around, you would still prosecute them for selling within so many feet of the school, wouldn't you?
Certainly. Certainly.
So it's the character of the school, not who's present.
It's a drug-free school zone. That's very clear from the signs.
But you're saying here it works differently. It depends what the composition of the students are in the building at the time someone's present.
I do believe that loitering, the purpose of the statute is to keep the sexual predator away from the children, as opposed to the purpose of the drug statute, which is to keep the drug peddler away from the building in and of itself, because when there's nobody in the building, it's still a nice little vacant place to go and sell drugs. But there are still parking lots, there are still playgrounds, there are still lots of places around, empty places around, where drug dealing can occur. While
this goes back to Justice Ridgely's question about the primary purpose of the school. If you're one of the people who's not supposed to be somewhere, and you'd like to make sure that you're not in the wrong place at the wrong time and you're arrested, if you find out that the school is primarily educating adults, and that's true, but you show up on the day when there are children present, then all of a sudden you're in trouble. How does that work?
Well, that may actually be a very good argument to raise in some other case, but certainly not in this one where he shows up every Saturday around noon when there's nothing but children there running around on their leotards. Now, he can't say, oh, I just happened to accidentally stumble by. He's obviously there for a specific purpose, and this is the kind of purpose that obviously I think the General Assembly had in mind in forbidding this kind of loitering in the area of a place where little children are running around, and especially where they're running around in their underwear, for heaven's sake.
Why did they use the word primary purpose then? Why not just say that it's an institution which has a purpose of educating or instruction of children?
Or a sole purpose. I suppose primary purpose does allow some room for, say, adult education classes in a school. Certainly the elementary school at times is filled with students who are not children. There could be adult education classes. There could be other functions going on in the school that do not involve children. So it's the primary purpose, not necessarily the exclusive purpose. And I think the General Assembly wanted to make that clear. That's the only thing I can think of by putting in primary. And it's not an institution that may, for example, have a casual purpose of once in a while having a child's class, like perhaps a YMCA may on a Saturday have some type of children's exercise class or something like that. But the primary purpose of the YMCA is not to educate young children. However, the point I'm making, I think, is that the primary purpose of the Newark Dance Academy, both by its name and by the testimony of what was going on Saturday, did have the primary purpose of educating that protected class, that is, children under the age of 16.
On Saturday.
That was the specific, there was no doubt that on Saturday that was the case. The only shadow arises as to what it was doing on the other days of the week. Heather Pate just testified, I teach children from, I think Your Honor said, 2 years old to adult. From my own experience, that Newark Dance Academy, not that I have any specific knowledge of the Newark Dance Academy, but other dance academies, is that that student body, the ones who go there, are primarily children and teenagers, and that through high school, and then they go on to college and continue their performance arts studies in that venue. The dance, as opposed to a dance studio, which teaches ballroom dance, is primarily to adults. If the court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to, to address two things. First, with respect to the indictment, it appears that from a review of the docket that on August 17th, the officer testifies that it was August 17th, 2005, that he spoke with Ryan Pate and came up with the April 8th date. The case review was subsequently on October 20th, and that can be found in the state's appendix B23 through B24. With respect to the primary purpose of the school, the state argued in its brief that the plain language should control. It seems that it is arguing an inconsistent position today. There is nothing in the record whatsoever to support that the term academy means that its primary purpose is to teach children. Otherwise, I guess everyone at the Air Force Academy would be children. The fact that every Saturday, he states that he was there every Saturday, and that Saturdays that the teacher taught children does not control the statute. The statute does not say it's the intent of the particular employee at that particular time. It says primary purpose, which means the fundamental intent. The means by which it made the money, which is its intent, is through teaching people to adult, as she indicated. Just one of the means being teaching a class with children, and does not make it its primary purpose. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.